The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Welcome back. Whichever missed the first hour, well, that's on you. But don't worry about it. We've got podcasts on top of podcasts. And as soon as we are done, Rhonda, celebrating 10 years of producing the show today, has the podcasts up just minutes really after we're done by 11. You know, we're done at 10 by 11. Look at there. There's the entire show. So 7 o'clock hour was magical. My visit with Mike was great. Thank you to all of you who are Medicare brokers. helping a brother out. Oh, goodness gracious. I mean, I've seen all those ads, and you don't get Medicare A or B. It's like, dude, I'm nearly 67. I'll get to it when I get to it. So, and there are apparently hazards to that. Well, you learn, you learn something every day. All right, a couple of things. We're going to dive into Trump trial, day two this week. Of course it's a joke. Of course it's a mockery. But he might get convicted. So that means that it's not dismissible. I mean, by us, it's like, all right, we got to sort of see how this plays out. And I guess this, every day I will say this at least once. It is an outrage that this is not on television. Cameras in the courtroom are the public's right to know. Every courtroom. What does every courtroom contain at every level? The public's business being done. And I know everybody was standoffish, even hesitant about that. They said, it will adversely affect justice because the lawyers will play to the cameras instead of the jury. And that was always stupid. What does every lawyer want to do? Prevail. Every prosecutor wants a conviction. Every defense attorney wants an acquittal. And the cameras don't give you that. I mean, might there be some hot dog people? I mean, did Johnny Cochran play to the cameras some? He did, but he knew that it was one and the same task in the OJ trial. He knew that playing to the court of public opinion that a guilty black man had to go free in order to achieve racial revenge was exactly the message that he had for the jury. So it was a totally complementary task. So it is in all of that, the cameras in the courtroom are a foregone. They're baked in. When they're there, they're no longer a novelty. You know, nobody cares about them being there anymore. They just do their jobs of prosecuting and defending. And we should be able to see this shameful team of political hacks led by Alvin Bragg putting this threadbare case together. Yesterday, and we'll get to this. In fact, Jonathan Turley drew attention to this, one of the great analysts working. You know who the first... the first witness was? And I'm instantly 12 years old. One of the great names of all time, David Pecker. God, the playground beatings must have been something to see. He's the National Enquirer guy. And the testimony there is that Donald Trump was trying to get the Enquirer, and the Enquirer is kind of conservatively run at times, that they were, sitting on stories that might have been damaging to Trump. Well, they can run whatever they want to run. If there's a newspaper that wants to smear Trump every day, like the New York Times, they get to do that. If there's a newspaper that wants to, highlight things for people, highlight certain things, de-emphasize others, that's called their editorial judgment. So what is this guy even doing as the first witness in a trial? It's kind of funny. It's referred to as the hush money trial. It's not even a hush money trial because hush money is not illegal either. Hush money is a non-disclosure agreement, the NDA. It's person A pays person B to shut up. And person B says, give me money, I'll shut up. Kind of like Dak Prescott's accuser. Dak was just in the news talking about he's not real eager to get a new contract, which is probably good. It's called, hey, Dak, let's see how this year's playoffs go. playoffs are a tough topic here the early portion of the week. Mavericks got absolutely destroyed by the Clippers over the weekend. And the Stars dug themselves an early hole and lost to the Vegas Golden Knights last night. So, and here I am sitting here, you know, like a big old dummy. There's no such thing as jinxes. So I'm being comically hard on myself. But what I was talking about a couple of days ago is, wouldn't it be neat if the big DFW area, if we did something that's never been done before, and that's have an NBA championship and a Stanley Cup won by the same city at the same time. Now, I think there are 9 times in history where they've both been playing, like the Bruins and the Celtics in Boston, 76ers and Flyers in Philly. There are others. I'm going to look them up. But they've never been, but one team failed to do its part. or maybe both of them did. I don't know. It's in some instances. But yeah, in order to get to the NBA Finals, in order to get to the Stanley Cup, you have to actually win games in the first round. So Mavericks tee it up against the Clippers. I wish I felt better about this series. You lose the first one, you got to win 4 of the next 6. So good luck with that. And the Stars lost home ice advantage by losing at home. You can't lose at home. So anyway, best to the local teams, best to the local teams, best to the local teams. Anyway, but Dak, as you know, that's a real, you talk about a he said, she said. This woman says, hey, you raped me. He says, no, I didn't. And her attorney, there's a letter from her attorney that says, yeah, if you give us, X number of dollars, we'll be quiet. That's straight up extortion. So anyway, but that whole thing has moved from Dallas County into Collin County now. So there's that. Anyway, the whole point about courtrooms and what ought to be happening and what ought not to be happening is that it's all the public's business being done in there. And so that's the end of my rant today. I'll have another one tomorrow. It's insane that there are not cameras in every courtroom. Well, there were cameras on Bree Jackson at NBC this morning as she offered the following package about what lies ahead in the Trump trial.
So prosecutors argue that before he was president, Donald Trump led a scheme to quiet adult film star Stormy Daniels.
Oh, I remember. I was in the middle of NDA talk. I guess I'd finish that point, that if person A and person B arrange in a non-disclosure agreement, that's what it is. It is an agreement. It's person A saying, you be quiet about stuff. You don't talk about stuff. Just shush. And in exchange for that, I'll give you money. It's like when maybe there's been a tense relationship, you're leaving a job or you're leaving a relationship or you're leaving a whatever. And the person on the receiving end of the money says, okay, for this amount of money, I won't say anything. So that's an agreement between parties. So it's not even a hush money trial. The trumped up charge, no pun intended, is that, or maybe the pun is totally intended, is that Trump, in making these payments to Michael Cohen to give the money to Stormy Daniels, that's somehow that he listed that as a legal expense. Well, it's a legal agreement. He paid his attorney. By definition, that's a legal expense. This is so stupid.
And corrupt the 2016 election. Now, prosecutors also called their first witness to the stand, who's expected to testify again today.
I think it went very well.
Former President Trump airing his grievances after an intense day in a New York courtroom.
This will go on for a long time. It's very unfair.
Trump. It didn't go for a long time yesterday. They just had like a couple of hours of testimony. This is so weird. A juror had a toothache. Had to run the juror to the dentist, so everybody goes home.
Faces 34 counts related to falsifying business records to hide hush money payments made to former porn star Stormy Daniels. He's pleaded not guilty to the criminal charges.
This was an extraordinary moment. The idea of a former president of the United States being held to account.
Being held to account. This is Melissa Murray at NYU. I guess happy to be off campus because the Jew haters are taking over all the buildings. And you'll hear me. It's historic. Yes, it is. It's never happened before. That's true. It's remarkable. Yes, it is. It's a spectacle. I mean, well, yeah. But virtually everybody making those observations wants him to be convicted. being held to account. I love that. What I'm waiting for is November 5th, when these jackals who are tormenting Trump, when they will be held to account. I mean, not in a kind of a direct way, because there's nothing that really happens to Alvin Bragg. Nothing really happens to Letitia James. You know, nothing really happens to Jack Smith when Trump wins on November 5th. I mean, it has no direct, correlative, consequential effect on them, except they will be reduced to tears. Make them cry again, 2024.
Of 12 ordinary New Yorkers is truly an extraordinary act.
During opening statements, prosecutors claimed Mr. Trump covered up a criminal conspiracy to corrupt the 2016 presidential election by lying on his business records over and over again.
So that the jury knows when they hear names, when they hear events, they can go back to that opening and say, I remember what they said about.
That's Barbara McQuaid, former U.S. attorney.
Here's how that fits into these various pieces fit together in the puzzle.
The defense painted Trump as a family man, only making a payment to his lawyer, Michael Cohen, for the retainer agreement for legal services rendered.
What Blanche is essentially saying is that this is not a thing where he squeaks by because there's some reasonable doubt. We believe he's innocent.
Prosecutors also called their first witness, David Pecker, the former publisher of the National
Sorry.
They alleged he played a key role in bearing claims from women who said they had affairs with Trump. The former president has denied having relations with Daniels and contends he's willing to take the stand.
Oh, won't that be something? So, all right, let me pause. And the first witness, Mr. Pecker, I'm sorry, it's total Beavis and Butthead. That's just such a weird strategy. I mean, it shows the weakness of the case. But don't just believe me. There's an expert who feels similarly. 822.
I'm going back someday. Come on, man, to Blue Bay.
So in 1977, Linda Ronstadt has a huge hit of Blue Bayou off of Simple Dreams. And, of course, it was a Roy Orbison record. From 1961, Roy Orbison would have been 88 today, passed away back in 1988. All righty, 866-660-5759. Jonathan Turley on with Laura Ingraham last night said, having the National Enquirer guy as the first witness, was that even really relevant?
Well, it was a rather bizarre start, right? Because he's talking about something that's really not part of the indictment. It's like having a bank robbery case and they're starting out with a tax evasion witness. I mean, if I was one of the jurors, I'd be a little bit confused. Is this somehow part of this odd conspiracy defrauding effort by the president? And the answer is no. They got the judge to agree to bring this in to show a pattern. But it frankly has very little to do with the key linchpins they're going to have to establish.
A pattern of what? A pattern of what? A pattern of Trump trying to prevent damaging stories about him from coming up in an election year? Oh, boy, nobody's ever done that before. Nobody's ever thought, wow, that's some terrible story's about to come out. What if there's something I can do about that? No, nobody's ever done that before. And when they have, not a crime.
You know, does the evidence show that Trump had the intent to somehow commit fraud? And part of that is still this search for what crime Trump was trying to conceal. Because even after the first day of this trial, not just on this network, people are debating what that crime is. Because the suggestion is that he did all of this because he committed a federal election law crime. But the Department of Justice rejected that. They didn't prosecute, did not charge.
The Federal Election Commission itself declined.
And many experts in the field say, no, this isn't a federal crime. So if you get even below the surface by 1 millimeter, you're left with a really confusing case.
Jonathan Turley, he's one of the best. All right, we've got to get into the news here at the bottom of the hour. And on the other side of it, Dr. Tom Oliverson, who really wants to be Dade Phelan's successor as Speaker of the House and may well do that even if Dade survives his runoff against David Covey. Oh, Dade, what a piece of work this guy is. Yesterday, he announced a joint committee on the effects of social media on our youth, and like blah, blah, blah. I mean, by the way, important issue, but a total platitude. And Jared Patterson is the chairman. We're going to get, between now and the runoff, maybe two or three more special committees that Dade is going to float to distract you from his failures, distract you from the Paxton impeachment that he was the key henchman for, distract you from everything on his list of failings. So I placed an over-under at three on how many special blue ribbon committees and panels we're going to get designed to distract you from the fact that he's a crappy Speaker of the House. And listen, down in Texas 20, well, listen, we'll talk to Oliverson about this. Are Democrats going to come to Dade Phelan's rescue in his district? And listen, even if Dade is able to return to the Texas House, it won't be a Speaker of the House. We'll ask Dr. Oliverson about that as well. And by the way, I'm glad to be a conduit and testing ground for anybody that thinks they want to be a Speaker of the House. Other names may arise, so we'll see how that all goes. Little Texas politics next. Mark Davis, 831, Nikki Whaley in the newsroom. Well, there are plenty of stories going on globally, a couple of wars raging, plenty of things going on in the national scene, an election, plenty of election interference in a courtroom in New York, and anti-Semitism sweeps through various college campuses. So globally, nationally, plenty of topics to keep us busy. And alongside that, here in Texas, just a little over a month from now, we have a runoff on May 28th, where I sense that at least in a few of these elections, if not all of them, there'll be a little bit of a completion of a message being sent to, well, you can call it the Austin swamp, the status quo crowd, just whatever, the go along to get along, middling semi-conservatives, that there's a real breath of fresh conservative air that's about to come in to make Texas even a little redder than it is. Are we going to have a new House Speaker when the legislature next meets at the beginning of next year? I'd say that's a yes, whether Dade Phelan survives his runoff against David Covey on May 28th. But a gentleman who some weeks ago already stepped in and said, hey, I'd like to be the next House Speaker is fresh out of Cypress, northwest of Houston. State Rep. Dr. Tom Oliverson. Great to have you back, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me back. Good to be with you again.
Thank you. And we got all kinds of Texas things to talk about and maybe even some national things. But first, let me just ask, how's the race? Is there competition yet? Anybody alongside you has said, hey, I want to be Speaker too?
Yeah, nothing official. And, you know, the Speaker statute is pretty clear about the fact that just as I didn't have a lot of conversations before I jumped in, you're really not supposed to engage in a lot of politicking on this until you actually filed. So nobody's filed yet other than our current Speaker, Dade Phelan, and myself. So, you know, we'll see. I think there could be, especially if he loses in the runoff, I think there could be other people that jump in.
Now, that will clear the decks. Do you think, I mean, obviously you've got certainly a vested interest, but just objectively as an observer, do you think Dade survives against David Covey on May 28th?
You know, it's hard to say, honestly. I think anytime statistically that you're the incumbent and you're coming into a runoff where you finished in second place, the odds are stacked against you. But he's a fighter, and honestly, I don't know. It will be interesting to see what the voters there have to say about that.
It will, and you're right. And for those that don't know, if let's say it's me, I'm the incumbent, and I lose a Republican primary, or I don't get to 50% in a Republican primary, crowded field or just one other person, whatever, it means that more than half the voters didn't want me. And when that happens, a lot of the people who are sort of the insurgents and trying to look for change, they go, ooh, there's blood in the water now. Whoa, let's finish the job on the runoff. That's why if you are an incumbent dragged into a runoff, it's really hard to ultimately, you know, prevail, which is tough news for Justin Holland and Frederick Frazier and others, perchance. Here's the weird thing, though. Usually a Republican primary, you know, it's a Republican thing, could Democrats come to Dade's rescue because Democrats, all other things being equal, would love to keep him as Texas Speaker.
Well, so again, on that particular issue, I think you would have to, if that were the case, you'd have to find Democrats that didn't already vote in the Democrat primary in order for that to happen. Because as you know, in the runoff situation, you can't have voted in the other party's primary right. and then show up in a runoff. So that universe is probably a lot smaller than folks think.
It is. I think that's mathematically true. I think it's logistically true. But if there's a campaign afoot, And I would love to know that they probably couldn't do this in a stealthy way. Somebody would say, hey, you know, I'm a Democrat voter and everybody, you know, from somebody's trying to get me to go vote for Dade Field turnout and can be middling sometimes, even in the primaries.
Yeah.
I think there are plenty of available Democrats who can be. I mean, I don't know if it's a huge number that'll put them over the top, but if it's a close election, it probably will be a close election. I think there may be that type of Democrat mischief. But we'll all find out. We'll find out how that goes. Do we need to solve this? This is a big thing on the Republican wish list, by having closed primaries, by simply saying, you know what? Democrat primaries are for Democrats. Republican primaries are for Republicans. Let's just have let's close those and have that separation in the primaries. Are you in favor of that?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm the speaker next session, I'm certainly open to the conversation. I do know that other states have done that. I have heard conflicting reports as to whether or not there's some unintended consequences. I know one of my colleagues went to Philadelphia after the 2020 election and uncovered some pretty unsettling things in a few Democrat precincts where the Republicans that showed up to vote were sort of sent to the back room with the voting machine that was broken, or at least that was what I was told. So, you know, I think we have to look at that. I think we also have to look at it from the perspective of unintended consequences. And if there's one thing I know for sure, it's that every bill you try to pass on election is hotly contested because everybody thinks if it's good for the other side, it must be bad for me, regardless of what the facts actually are. But the other thing is I've never seen an area of policy that is so fraught with unintended consequences. So I'm definitely open to it, and I can see the pros. I just want to make sure that we have a thorough conversation.
That is a really thoughtful answer, and I appreciate it because I'm at one level, it's like, yeah, close them. I mean, let's have simplicity. Republicans doing this, Democrats doing this. If I'm hearing you correctly, there's a possibility that there's a certain comforting egalitarianism where everybody just shows up and everybody, you know, vote, you know, in whatever primary you want. Then, as opposed to if we like, be careful what you wish for. If the Republicans are over here, Democrats are over here in Dallas, no pun intended, or Freudian slip, in Texas's big blue counties, mischief could be afoot to somehow jimmy with what they will instantly know are the Republican primary machines.
I mean, I'm just going to tell you as a Republican in Harris County, Mark, and I get this from my colleagues all the time. They're like, gee, you know, we should just have Harris County Day when it comes to the elections committee, because you guys literally are the epicenter of everything that's gone wrong. If there's a way to cheat, it'll happen in blue Harris County, right?
Oh, Harris County. Well, all right, that's it. Let's pivot to November. We are Texas. Trump will win Texas. This just in. No shocker to that bulletin. In other states, you know, you're huge focus on Arizona, Pennsylvania, Michigan, obviously. There's a phrase I hear a lot, and that is that we hope that 2024 will be better than 2020 was. Our eyes are open. We'll be a little more. I think the national party, and even with the Trump campaign, is going to pay for like 100,000 nationwide election watchers. What's your thought on how it's a human system? There's no way to have a cheating free election. Not possible. But what's your thought on how this will go, and is this an election that we can proceed toward and have some confidence?
I think so. I mean, and again, maybe I just like to be on the glasses half full side. But, you know, the reality is if you look at 2020 with coming off of COVID and, you know, Omicron and all the things that we were dealing with, there were a tremendous number of excuses that were employed why we couldn't follow the law, why we couldn't do it the way we've always done it. I always like to point out, like, Wisconsin, for example, has a law that basically says that no mail ballots go to nursing homes, that you actually have to send election judges physically to the nursing home to watch people fill out the ballots so that you don't have the aides filling out the ballots. Well, guess which recent election they were not allowed to go and collect the ballots. And of course, they had to be mail ballots. And of course, Wisconsin was one of those states that was in question, right? So I am optimistic that some of the foolishness that we saw in 2020, there's just not the excuse for it. Doesn't mean that people won't try anything and everything.
Indeed.
You see right now, they won't even let President Trump leave Manhattan to go and campaign. They will try, but I'm optimistic that it's nationwide. I think we're in a little different place than we were in 2020. There weren't these ready-made excuses about contagion and, you know, everybody stay indoors and all that foolishness.
As an actual doctor, do you hold the sort of the informed view that COVID was, of course, a fearsome thing when it arrived in March and wrapped itself around us, but that the overreactions and reckless retooling of election laws on the fly, that's what made the overall 2020 result controversial, shall we say?
No question, Mark. I mean, I think it's clear that was an opportunity that was not wasted by the Democrat Party in 2020. And it's very frustrating to me that was sort of, you know, that they hijacked the election with that. But essentially, that is what they did, right? It just flooded the field with mail ballots, make it as difficult as possible to have any methods of integrity. Because, you know, we're trying to make it easier for people to not have to vote in person because of fear of dying from COVID. And of course, this is all, happening in the setting of we're coming out of all these mass mandates, and we're coming out of all of these lockdowns and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it really was kind of an unprecedented time.
No doubt. And a lot of people thought, I guess we're under the wire now. I mean, I don't know. There's still plenty of time for them to, you know, come up with another virus, but it looks like we'll be unfettered by that this time. Please, fingers crossed. Tom Oliverson is here, state rep down in Harris County and running for speaker, no matter what happens to Dade. Yesterday, you gave some props to Attorney General Paxton for stopping what you called an out-of-state end run. This involves SB 14, protecting children from the irreversible damage of trans lunacy. What did the AG do?
So what he did was he opened an investigation and asked for some records from Seattle Children's Hospital that was essentially trying to go around our state law and provide puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones to children in the state of Texas using mail order. This is not dissimilar from what you're hearing as far as the concerns regarding abortion pills being mailed in to Texas as a way to try to circumvent state law. So he was able essentially to get them to basically stop seeing patients in Texas or taking patients in Texas just by virtue of the fact that he's investigating them. They just unilaterally decided, well, I mean, if they're going to be this serious about it, we're going to go away. So huge props to him on that, because again, these are out-of-state providers, so it's not like the state of Texas was going to have a very easy time going after doctors practicing in Seattle. And so he did something, at least in my opinion, as the bill author on the House side of SB 14. I think Ken Paxton did something yesterday to protect children in Texas that the law simply couldn't have done without his help.
And there's another SB 14 angle is because you're from Harris County, but you certainly know a lot and spend a lot of time in Austin, the People's Republic of Austin. Are they trying to have a city council resolution in Austin to make Austin a sanctuary city for trans, for transitioning kids?
Yeah.
And what in the world, like, nothing shocks me out of Austin. What are they trying to do?
Well, I think they're trying to create a sanctuary city for the people to be able to access that type of care in the city of Austin. The irony of that is that the mechanism by which we enforce SB 14 is through the Texas Medical Board, and the Texas Medical Board works through the receipt of anonymous complaints about providers. And in the statutory language, what we said is that if they find proof that somebody is giving puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones or doing surgery on kids, the only administrative penalty for that is permanent forfeiture of license. So if they then lose their license and they go out and they keep doing what they're doing, now, according to state law, they're engaged in a third-degree felony, which essentially compounds every day that they, you know, every day that they practice medicine without a license, according to statute, is a separate felony. So I'm not sure how that would actually work out in their advantage. When I read that yesterday, it was posted, the first thing I thought of is, this is almost like setting up a deer feeder and sitting in the deer blind and just waiting for the deer to come along, because I don't know how they could possibly protect these folks and allow them to continue practicing and doing what they're doing, because essentially all it takes is one anonymous complaint, exactly. And then that triggers a medical board.
It would seem fairly obvious what they're trying to do. Well, what Dr. Tom Oliverson is trying to do is get reelected and maybe be the next Texas House Speaker. So we'll be chatting from time to time, and we always appreciate it. Tom Oliverson on the old X Twitter platform there, and we appreciate you, sir. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate you.
You betcha. Dr. Tom Oliverson, Mark Davis, 851. You want something that'll make your day? Go to my Twitter, the X. I just posted something. I feel a certain compunction to identify moments when Alec Baldwin is 100% right. Whoa, what would that be? So there's Alec sitting there, what looks like a takeout, carryout place or something. He's on the phone ordering something, whatever. And one of these pro-Hamas, protesters is in his face with a phone. Hey, Alec, just say free Palestine. Just say free Palestine. Just say it one time and I'll leave you alone. And he's ignoring her. Alec, just say free Palestine. Just say free Palestine, and I'll leave you alone. I promise. And he ignores her. Then he works his way toward the door, opens the door, kind of opens the door for her. Like, why don't you leave first? She ain't leaving. Alec, just say free Palestine. Just say free Palestine. I would actually play this audio for you, except she drops an F-bomb in the middle of it, referring to Israel as effing criminals or something like that. So anyway, I'll let you consume it on your own time. And make sure you stay all the way to the end. It's about 45 seconds, because after 44 seconds of this abuse, Alec whips the phone, just slaps the phone right out of her hand. It's awesome. I am with Alec on this one. 8:59.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.